Our next case today is number 052879, the United States against Francis Barevich.
Please, the court, John Shiro appearing on behalf of Francis Barevich. Your Honors, the issue before the court I do not think is terribly complicated, and it is one that is probably not a reoccurring problem because there has been somewhat of a change in the guidelines since the guidelines were enacted that apply to Mr. Barevich. While the possession of sadomasochistic child pornography is relevant conduct under 1B1.3 of the Federal Sentencing Guidelines, I believe that that relevant conduct must be considered in the context of the applicable guideline. Here, there is a specific guideline for possession, mere possession of child pornography.
First of all, of course, as you concede in your brief, this court had essentially this case in the United States against Ellison. And secondly, even though there is a separate guideline for simple possession, our approach has been to begin with the offense of conviction and then apply the guidelines, which include applying relevant conduct. And I guess thirdly, I'm not even sure if you had started with possession, I think you might have fallen into a cross-reference to the other guideline and been right where you are anyway. So there are a number of reasons why I'm not sure how you can get around the result in Ellison.
Your Honor, I think that is, quite frankly, the rub. And I concede what this court did in Ellison was say, look, the argument that it's not that we shouldn't consider relevant conduct, we're not going to do that because that's not how we've ever interpreted the guidelines and that's not how we're supposed to use them. What wasn't raised, and what I think Judge Stadmiller agreed, well, maybe that has been specifically raised and let's let the Seventh Circuit decide, is, well, where there is a specific guideline for the relevant conduct and it doesn't include that enhancement, is it appropriate to do that? I mean, he's already been given the more serious charge, he starts at a higher offense level of 17 versus 15. And because at that time, there wasn't an enhancement, you can't kind of give him the worst of both worlds.
But the fact is, I mean, I understand the point, but the fact is you would be required to treat as the same case, a case where somebody has transported, which Congress has chosen to regard as a more serious problem, you know, rationally enough, I suppose, from the case where somebody is simply possessed. And if you start from that and then you say, and there's no exemption inside the transporting guideline from 1B1.3, the fact that there may be another guideline that addresses the relevant conduct, that if that had been the only thing, why should that matter?
Well, let's take the question as you first posed it, Your Honor. If he had just been charged with possession, I don't think they could then try to reach across and say, well, in 2B or 2G2, we could do an enhancement. We're going to take that back and do it here. You'd say, well, no, that's not appropriate. He was charged and convicted under the possession.
Well, there is a cross-reference in 2G, or in the old, you know, obviously pre-change, the old 2G2.4C2 cross-references back to the trafficking guideline. Even if you started out where you were, you might be in the same boat.
Well, you might be, but I don't think the court should interpret the guidelines to do so. I don't think there isn't a reason, I think, to say the guideline 2G2.4 says we're not going to have that enhancement you've been convicted of that, let's reach across and get that. I'm not saying the court could make that finding and make the decision that's how it should be done, but I don't think it should. I don't think that's fair. I think when the government chose to charge the distribution, which it properly did, give them the increase of 15 to 17 at that time, I just don't think you can go back. And then using the analogy and saying, well, if we had possession, we'd still draw it back. We'd still draw it over from 2G2. I don't think that would have been appropriate either.
But your argument really sounds to me like a frontal attack on the whole use of relevant conduct, which, you know, one could do. But it's been there since the beginning of time in the guidelines world. It strikes me that I can imagine all sorts of things that might be relevant conduct that have different structures in the guideline for that conduct if that had been the only thing that had been there.
Well, I don't relish the thought of a frontal attack on the relevant conduct portion of the guidelines.
I'm having trouble distinguishing your attack from others that I can imagine.
Well,
I guess.
And I understand, because I think it is a little bit unique in the sense that where you have these two guidelines about two fairly specific items, that is, are you possessing? What are the guidelines for that? And distribution, what are the guidelines for that? And you have the more serious, and then we have this peculiar anomaly where on the possession, it doesn't have the enhancement. I don't think you can just, in a sense, you would be writing out 2G2.4 and saying, well, that really didn't matter. They didn't mean any of that when they didn't include the enhancement. I mean, they were there. They drafted it. The Sentencing Commission, they can see what they've done. I think to say that it doesn't matter is to suggest that, oh, well, this just must have been an oversight, and it didn't matter that they didn't include the enhancement.
But surely 2G2.4 does matter. Very much, if the only thing the government charges somebody with is possession, then that's the guideline that you would use, right?
I agree.
So it's meaning there's a universe in which it's meaningful, even if it doesn't include this universe.
Right, but under that context, I don't agree and don't think it would be appropriate for the court to then reach back and grab that other enhancement from the distribution guideline. I just don't think that would be appropriate. And I understand. I mean, if the court is of the opinion that no, Ellison controls this, even though that appellant didn't raise it, we don't care. Our position is the same. Well, then I lose. I mean, I'm aware of that, and it's the situation I'm in.
Making a valiant effort.
I also would like to just briefly address the issue that the government raised with regard to. That the video itself, there is simply no evidence of that anywhere, either in the trial court, and I think footnote 3 of the government suggests that it's never been introduced, and the attempt now to characterize it as sadomasochistic for the very first time in a brief, in an opinion essentially from counsel for the government, is not appropriate. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shiro. And we'll hear now from Mr. Pollack.
Good morning, Your Honors. Brian Pollack, Assistant United States Attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin, appears on behalf of the United States. As we indicated in our brief, we rely on Ellison, and as the Court has indicated today, we think that forestalls any claim that is made by Mr. Berovich here today. Unless there are any questions from the Court for government counsel, I will rest on our brief.
I gather not. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Shiro, did you have any time left? Two and a half minutes. Do you have anything further, sir? Well, Mr. Shiro, you did serve by appointment of the court, and you have the deep thanks of the court for having taken the case and for your fine efforts on behalf of your client. The case will be taken under advisement.